Welcome to the Amherst Wesleyan Church Sermon Podcast.
All right. So you're not here to hear me. You're here to listen for God to speak to you, right? So just be listening for him and just ignore all the weird things my voice does this morning, okay? We are starting a new series, and we're going to be spending the entire month of March looking at the book of Ruth. Now, Ruth is a very short book in the Old Testament, and it is about a young woman named Ruth. You are right. 10 points, everyone. But there's some really interesting things that we can learn from this small book in the Old Testament. Now, in order to kind of set that up properly, how many of you have ever watched Mr. Bean? All right, good. All right. So there are a few episodes of Mr. Bean that are kind of the favorites. Do you remember the one where he's on the park bench and he's making a sandwich? And he's there and he like takes his sock off and puts the lettuce inside his sock and whips it around. And he makes his tea in a hot water bottle and he's got a bottle of milk. Like a baby bottle of milk, and he like sticks it in his mouth and sucks out a little bit of milk and then spits it in. You guys remember that? Okay, and then there's one of the other favorite ones is when he's making a turkey. And he's there and he's dealing with the turkey and he's putting the stuffing in and then he realizes he doesn't have his watch on anymore. And so instead of pulling all the stuffing out of the turkey and finding his watch, he sticks his head inside the turkey. Like, did you guys see that? Any of you too young to see that? You guys are too young to see that? Got it. Gotcha. Mr. Bean, the character essentially was an 8-year-old. He was a grown man behaving like an 8-year-old boy. That was essentially the character. And the thing is, he never really did things the way they were supposed to be done. He always did them the way that he wanted to do it or that he felt was best. And it always ended up in this hilarious, crazy, ridiculous situation that always fell apart. When we look at the book of Ruth, we enter into a story that directly follows the book of Judges. And the book of Judges really highlights what happens when people ignore what is right and just do things the way they want to do them. And when we look at the book of Judges and we compare it to the book of Ruth, we get this incredible contrast between what happens when you do it your way and what happens when you do it God's way. Now, at the very end of the book of Judges, there's this statement. It says in Judges 21, verse 25, "In those days, Israel had no king. Everyone did as they saw fit." Now, that phrase is actually repeated a few times in the book of Judges, but it is actually the last verse in that book. "In those days, Israel had no king, and everyone did as they saw fit." When we get to Ruth, chapter 1, verse 16, we see Ruth, who is dealing with her mother-in-law, After her husband has died and she could be going back to her homeland, she says to her mother-in-law, "Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. And where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God, my God." And right there we have this initial contrast where in Judges, the people are doing whatever they feel is right in their own eyes. And in Ruth, we have this beginning of the story where Ruth says, "I'm not going to do it my way. I'm following you and I'm following your God." And as we continue on, we see more and more of these contrasts. In Judges chapters 19 through 21, we see multiple situations where there is lust and rape and murder. But then in Ruth chapter 2, verses 8 and 9, we see that Boaz actually protects Ruth in the field. And he doesn't take her immediately when she shows some kind of romantic interest in him. It would have been nothing in the time of the judges. And these are happening at the same time, okay? Ruth is happening during the time of the judges. It would have been nothing for a single woman to be out in the field, working in the field, to then be attacked or captured or raped during the time of the judges. But in that situation, we see Boaz actually goes and protects her and tells her, "Stay close to my workers, they'll take care of you." In Judges chapter 16, we have the story of Samson. And in the story of Samson, he's a strong man and he's got relationship problems and he ends up with this woman named Delilah. And she betrays him time after time after time. But in Ruth chapter 3, we see that Ruth is loyal and honors Boaz. In Judges chapter 6, we see the judge Gideon threshing wheat in a wine press. Now, how many of you have ever threshed wheat? Right. The whole point of it is to knock the grain off of the chaff, off the stalk of the wheat, and in order to do that, you want the wind to pick up all the straw and blow it away. Well, a wine press is a giant bucket, so there's no wind coming at you, and so it's not very productive. But the reason he was doing that in a wine press is because he was afraid to be out in the open. Meanwhile, Ruth is out in a field, out exposed to everybody, and Gideon is there hiding, threshing wheat in a wine press, and Ruth is out gathering grain in an open field. In Judges 11 and 21, we have stories about these men who make these horrible vows, these promises, like, "The first thing that comes to me when I get home, I'm going to sacrifice." And when his daughter comes to meet him, he's like, "Well, I guess I got to sacrifice you." Like, some crazy stuff. We see women being mistreated and wives being mistreated. And in chapter 21, we actually see, this is a crazy story, where the tribe of Benjamin is nearly extinct, and so they come up with this scenario where they've made a vow where they can't let their women marry the tribe of Benjamin, and so they set this situation where they have the women get together for this dance party, and they tell the men of Benjamin to go and raid the dance party to steal women for their wives. That was their solution. Like, I'm not making these stories up. Like, that happens in the book of Judges. But in Ruth chapter 3, Ruth proposes to Boaz, And Boaz goes, I am greatly honored, but there's a way to do this. And I don't want to embarrass you, and I don't want to risk even the appearance of embarrassment for you. So this is what we need to do. In Judges chapter 3, we have the situation where Israel is being mistreated by the nation of Moab. And we have this guy, Ehud, who goes against King Eglon. And this is one of the best stories of Judges because it's so graphic and ridiculous. But Ehud ends up killing King Eglon by, like, Eglon is just a fantastic name for this guy because you can picture him. He's just this massively fat man, right? And Ehud stabs him with his dagger, and he's so fat. Again, I'm not making this up. He's so fat that he pushes the dagger in, and the fat, like, comes over his hand, and he doesn't get the dagger out because it's just, like, swallowed up by the guy's fat. And then he's there, and he dies on the floor, and his servants don't find him because they just think that he's in the bathroom having a dump. I'm not making this stuff up. Like, if you go to Judges chapter 3, you will see those details in the story. Okay? In Ruth chapter 1, we find out that Ruth is actually from the nation of Moab. Again, this contrast. Contrast after contrast after contrast. And I think when we see that kind of theme, it really helps explain what's going on, because we see in Judges this wild, crazy, messed up story that's highlighted by there was no king and everyone did what they thought was right in their own eyes. And this is what it produced. This chaos, this mess, this ridiculous situation, this mistreatment, this abuse, this murder. There's a part where this guy, he's there and the people come to his door and are like, send us out your men or your women, and so we can rape them. And he sends out his slave girl, and then they leave her on the porch, and he takes her and chops her up into bits and sends her pieces to all the tribes of Israel. Like, there's some messed up stuff. And at that time, there was no king, and everyone did what was right in their own eyes. And then we get to the book of Ruth, where we have Ruth being loyal to her mother-in-law, which, I mean, that's saying something in and of itself. You've got Ruth, who's a daughter of the nation of Moab, but is choosing to give up that way to follow God. Where she's out in the open field taking risk to provide for her and her mother-in-law. Where she's building this relationship with this man named Boaz, and he is not taking advantage of her. He's actually protecting her and walking with her and being honorable to her. When we look at the book of Judges, we see this enormous gap. And I think the biggest factor in that gap is that in the book of Ruth, we see what happens when we do it God's way. So this is my point this morning. And I know it seems a little harsh, But I think this is what we need to wrestle with today. As we're starting to look at the book of Ruth, and we see this contrast with the book of Judges, I think we have to acknowledge, we need to admit, we need to accept that your way isn't the right way. Your way is not the right way. And I know some of you are sitting there going through and being like, well, that's not really true, because I've had some good arguments and I'm actually right most of the time. Or, well, what if I'm doing the right thing? Then my way is the right way, and blah, blah. Okay. The simple fact is that if it is at its core your way, it's not the right way. The way we need to go is God's way. The way that we should be walking is the way of Christ, is the way of Jesus. Actually, after Jesus dies and rises from the dead, they didn't initially start calling that movement Christianity. They called it the way. Because Jesus had said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except by me. And so they began by calling it followers of the way. And it is God's way that we need to be going. And we need to accept His way. And we need to surrender ourselves to His way. Because your way isn't the right way. Judges shows us over and over and over and over again what happens when there is no king and everyone does what is right in their own eyes. It's not even, and they were there and they were corrupt and they were terrible and they were selfish and they were just doing whatever they wanted to do, and they knew what they were doing was wrong and they made terrible choices. No. These people looked at the situations, made their own judgments, and determined that it was right in their own eyes. They thought they were doing things the right way. And the chaos ensued. And then we get to the book of Ruth. And she says, I am not going to leave you. Your people will be my people and your God my God. I am not going my own way. I am going God's way. And I know we don't like this statement, but I believe it is what we need to accept for the next step. I mean, even in the book of Luke, when Jesus is there and he's praying in the Garden of Gethsemane before he is betrayed and taken to be crucified, he is there and he is praying to God. And he's saying, God, if there's any other way to do this, then please make it happen. And then he says, but not my will, but yours be done. Even Jesus in the garden before he is crucified says, not my way, your way. And I believe we need to simply accept that your way, my way, isn't the right way. And part of that is because our way is always corrupted. How many of you have ever tried to cut soft bread with a dull knife? You end up just throwing the loaf out and the knife through a window, right? Because it just tears it all to bits. You're like, I wanted a slice of bread, I wanted some toast, and now I've just got chunks. Some of you have worked on cars or snow blowers or ATVs, and you got water in the gas tank. And everything else about the vehicle should be running right, but because there's water in the gasoline, it doesn't work. It doesn't run. Everything else is right. But if it's messed up at the source, it doesn't matter what you do, it's going to create problems. Your way isn't the right way, because your way is broken. Now this is where that's okay. So theoretically, we're fine. Okay, you may not like it, but theoretically, I think you're following with me. Where the rubber meets the road is when we start saying things like, I want the best for my kids. And my way is to work really hard, get lots of money, get them all the tools and the gadgets that they want, the vacations they want, and put them into all the activities and sports and experiences that I can give them to set them up for the future. But what God is actually saying, what God's way actually is saying, you need to spend your life, the next 18 years of your life, building a proper foundation so that when the storms come and they get attacked by the enemy and they get attacked by anxiety and worry and fear and frustration and chaos and death, they are not shaken. Where they have such a foundation in God that they can navigate all the temptation and all the pain that comes from this world, and they do not get tossed about, they do not get destroyed, and they do not get manipulated by the enemy. You say, I want security for me and for my family. And so you go on the offensive and you say, my way is to attack others or to build emotional walls and emotional barriers. I'm either going to hide away from everything problematic in the world, or I'm going to build some kind of emotional barrier that doesn't let people in, or I'm just going to be this rough person that is constantly pushing people away because I want to protect myself from getting hurt and being vulnerable, and I want to protect me and my family. But God is actually saying, to you, I'm strong enough to take care of you, and I actually want you to be a living sacrifice. And it is through your vulnerability that you will find that you are most safe in me. You may say, I want love, and your way may be lust. It might be things on the internet. It may be fleeting relationships. It may be making desperate and intense changes to your appearance or how you behave in order to get attention from other people so that you feel like they're attracted to you and want to be around you. But God's way is the way of agape, which is this selfless love that gives without expectation of return. And that by living out agape, you actually create an environment where you are fulfilled with love. You may say, I want power and I want authority in my life. And so you go and you push and you dominate and you're mean to other people. You're mean to your spouse, you're mean to your kids, you're mean to your coworkers, You say sarcastic things. You keep things close to the chest so that then you've got all the cards to play, and you can manipulate, and you might tell a lie here and there, or you just may omit things here and there, and you don't ever share any kind of weakness. You can't admit any kind of weakness, because then they can attack you. And so you manipulate the situations, and you hurt whoever you have to hurt in order to get ahead in life. And God actually says, no, I want you to submit to the authorities that I've put in your life. And you may think, well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if God's way is the right way. You may be thinking, well, I feel like my way might be the right way here. How is submitting and surrendering and giving and sacrificing and confessing, how is that going to lead to something good? But when we look at the book of Ruth and the book of Judges, we know that when we do what is right in our own eyes, it produces chaos. But when we do it God's way, we get harmony and unity and restoration. Your way isn't the right way. So go God's way. Avoid the chaos. Listen to instructions. Listen to His leading. Listen to His values. Turn to God's way. Let Him fix the chaos that already exists in your life. Turn away from the sin. Surrender to Him. And take the steps of faith that He is saying to you to take. The worship team's going to come up and they're going to lead us in a few more songs here. And as you're wrestling with this idea and you're processing this and you're either trying to figure out how your way is actually the right way, or you can just manipulate the phrasing to say, you know what, well, my way is God's way, and so my way is the right way, or you're like, I'm just not sure that God's way really is the right way. Those are all signs that God is saying to you something else. And He's saying to you, it's time for you to stop trying it your way, and it's time for you to do it my way. And He's probably saying something specific to you today about what it is that you need to surrender, what it is you need to give up, what it is you need to submit to, what it is you need to give to go His way. Listen for His voice. Accept His voice. Go His way. And the first step in that process, in that journey, is you have got to admit to yourself and to God that my way is not the right way.
Thanks for listening and being part of our church and joining us in this journey to become down-to-earth people following Jesus in down-to-earth ways.